All right, everybody, get ready for today's deep dive. We're going all the way to the Supreme Court with this one. It's International Ladies Garment Workers Union v. NLRB, a 1961 case, and it's a story of good intentions gone wrong, like totally sideways.
You know what's wild about this case? No one's really the villain. The company, the union, they both thought they were doing the right thing, but they ended up in front of the highest court in the land. So how'd that happen?
Right, so let's set the scene. It's 1956. The International Ladies Garment Workers Union, or the ILGWU, they're organizing workers at this Texas knitwear plant. Fast forward a year, they make an agreement with the company. Basically, they're saying, we're the official representatives for these employees. Pretty normal, right?
Well, there's a snag, a big one. The union, they didn't actually represent the majority of the workers yet.
Wait, hold on. They signed an agreement based on what? Just a hope and a prayer?
Pretty much. Everyone just assumed they'd get the majority eventually, so they jumped the gun. Big mistake, that first agreement. Totally invalid, didn't have the support they needed. Now, they did end up getting that majority later and signing a real contract, but the damage is done.
Oh boy, the NLRB, they were already on the case, huh?
Oh yeah, the National Labor Relations Board, they were watching, and this raised some massive questions that went all the way to the Supreme Court. Could an employer recognize a union without majority support, even if it seemed like a good idea at the time? And could the NLRB step in and say, nope, hold up, gotta have an election first?
So, good intentions aside, did the law care?
Nope. The Supreme Court sided with the NLRB big time. They said good faith isn't a get-out-of-jail-free card in labor law.
Wow. Okay. So, from then on, assumptions wouldn't cut it. You had to prove you had the number.
You got it. Employers and unions had to verify they had majority support before doing anything official. That's a major change.
I bet. What was the court's thinking? Why wasn't good faith enough?
The court went back to basics. Employee choice. It's right there in the National Labor Relations Act. They basically said recognizing a union without that verified majority, it messes with the employee's right to pick their own representative or even choose no representation at all.
Right, like you can't force people to join a club they didn't sign up for.
Exactly. Justice Clark, he wrote the majority opinion and he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, letting this slide would completely wreck employee freedom of choice. Strong words.
Powerful stuff. So no more winging it. You gotta check. Double check, make sure you're representing the people you say you are.
Absolutely. The court made it clear, checking for that majority support, it's a small price to pay to make sure you're not stepping on anyone's rights. Like, just compare employee lists, look at signed cards, basic stuff.
This is important for everyone listening, right? Employers, unions, you can't just guess what the workers want. You have a legal duty to actually verify that support before anything else.
Yeah, right. And there are some pretty serious consequences if you don't. We're talking cease and desist orders, back pay for employees, even lawsuits. This stuff is serious business.
Yeah, wow. No kidding. So the stakes are high.
No doubt about it. And the court, they didn't just stop at saying, hey, recognizing a minority union's wrong. They went further. They backed the NLRB's remedy of halting that recognition, a full stop until a proper election could happen. Workers deserve a representative they actually chose.
Makes perfect sense to me. You got to make sure everyone's voice is heard, right? But wait, didn't some of the justices disagree with this whole thing? Like, wasn't there another side to this?
You're right. Justice Douglas, along with Justice Black, they wrote a concurring opinion. They thought the majority's take went a little too far in restricting the rights of those minority unions.
Interesting. So what do they propose?
Their thinking was, while a minority union shouldn't be the boss for all employees, they should at least be able to represent the workers who did join them, at least until a different union wins a real election.
So it's about finding that balance, huh? Protecting everyone, even those who aren't super active in the union stuff, but also recognizing those who want a union, even a smaller one.
You got it. It's a balancing act for sure. And that's what makes this case so interesting. It highlights all these competing interests and shows how tricky labor law can be.
Well, we've got a lot to think about here, that's for sure. We've gone deep on the Supreme Court's decision, why they decided the way they did, and even explored some different takes on the issue. But there's more to unpack, so much more.
You know, this whole case, it really shows how the law, it tries to be fair to everyone. Protect individual rights, but also make sure the system works for workers, employers, unions, everyone.
Right. And speaking of fair play, we've talked about verifying that majority support, right? But what happens when someone doesn't? Like, what are the consequences if you ignore the rules?
Oh, ignoring the rules, that can lead to, well, let's just say some serious legal trouble. The NLRB, they have a lot of ways to deal with these kinds of violations.
Like what? Give us the rundown.
One of the most common is something called a cease and desist order. It's basically the NLRB telling whoever's messing up, like, stop right there, you're doing it wrong. Could be the employer, could be the union, doesn't matter.
So like in ILGWUVNLRB, that meant putting the brakes on recognizing the union until they could prove they actually had the numbers, right?
Exactly. And that throws a wrench in the whole thing. For the employer, it can delay negotiations, you know, hold up important decisions. For the union, it's like they're stuck. No bargaining power, at least for a while, makes it harder to fight for their members.
Wow. So one little misstep can really snowball, huh?
You said it. It shows how everything's connected in this system. But those cease and desist orders, that's just the beginning. The NLRB, they can also hit you where it hurts. Your wallet. Hmm. We're talking back pay for employees who got the short end of the stick because of these unfair practices.
So let's say a union negotiates a bad contract because, you know, they didn't really have the majority backing them up. Would the employees get the money they missed out on, like the difference of what they should have earned?
You got it. Imagine you're losing out on, say, $50 a week because your so-called union agreed to a lousy contract. Over a year, that's over $2,500. And if a lot of employees were affected, those back pay awards, they can add up fast.
That definitely gets people's attention. Yeah. Makes it clear these rules aren't just suggestions. There's a real price to pay if you ignore them.
Absolutely. But wait, there's more. The NLRB, they can also go to federal court and ask for something called an injunction. It's basically a judge saying, you got to follow the law, no excuses.
So it's not just the NLRB, it's the whole legal system coming down on you.
Right. And don't forget about the individual employees. Even if the NLRB decides not to pursue a case, those workers, they can sue the employer or even the union for damages, you know, stuff related to those unfair labor practices.
So it's not just the government you got to worry about. It's the people you're supposed to be representing. That's a lot to juggle.
It is. And those lawsuits, they can get expensive, drag on forever, and really hurt your reputation. ILGWUVNLRB. It sent a clear message to everyone. Due diligence, it's not optional.
Sounds like taking those verification steps is crucial for everyone, not just to protect workers, but to keep employers and unions out of hot water. It's a win-win. Right?
Exactly. Knowing the rules and playing by them, it's just good business in the world of labor law.
Okay, so let's switch gears for a second. Remember Justice Douglas's concurring opinion. We talked about how he thought the majority went too far in limiting those minority unions. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure thing. Justice Douglas, he argued that, yeah, a minority union shouldn't be calling the shots for all employees, but they should still be able to represent their own members, even before an official election happens.
So it's like finding that middle ground, right? Making sure everyone's rights are protected, but also acknowledging that those who want a union, even a small one, deserve a voice at the table.
Right on. He was worried that if you completely shut out those members of a minority union, it might discourage people from getting involved in union activities at all.
That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder if a more flexible approach might work sometimes. You know, one that takes all the different factors into account.
It does. And it reminds us that legal precedents, they're not always so black and white. There are often different points of view, different ways of looking at the law.
Well, we've definitely had a lot to think about today. We've gone from a pretty simple agreement to this huge Supreme Court case that's still shaping labor law even now. But I think it's time to move on to another piece of this puzzle, the historical context.
Great idea. ILGWUVNLRB, it didn't happen in a vacuum. It's a product of its time, you know? It reflects how labor relations were evolving in the U.S. back then.
Okay, so let's go back in time for a minute. What was going on in the labor world that led to this case ending up in the Supreme Court?
All right, picture this. It's 1961. The labor movement, it's been gaining steam for decades. But with that success comes new challenges. Pushback, even.
So it was a time of both progress and tension for unions, like a real tug of war.
You got it. We have to remember that the National Labor Relations Act, the NLRA, was passed way back in 1935, part of FDR's New Deal. It was all about protecting workers' rights to organize, bargain collectively. And it created the NLRB to enforce those rights. But by the 50s and 60s, people were starting to worry about unions getting too powerful, concerns about abuse, you know.
So this case landed right in the middle of that whole debate.
Right in the thick of it. And here's the thing. This case, it involved an employer who willingly recognized a union without majority support. It wasn't just the union pushing the boundaries. Both sides made assumptions, didn't follow the rules.
So was the court trying to take sides in this whole labor management fight?
Not really. Their decision, it wasn't about being pro-union or anti-union. It was about setting clear rules for everyone, leveling the playing field.
So it was about setting expectations, making sure things were fair, and putting a big emphasis on employee choice.
Exactly. The court was saying, hey, we believe in workers organizing and bargaining, but let's make sure it's done right. Openly, honestly, and with respect for what the employees actually want.
Got it. So this wasn't just a one-off case. It changed how things worked moving forward. It had a lasting impact on labor relations.
It did. It underscored how important the NLRB's role is in overseeing those union elections, making sure everyone's represented fairly. And it set a precedent that still guides how we interpret the NLRA today.
Wow. A lot came out of this single case.
For sure. It shows how much power legal precedents have. They can shape specific outcomes and even the framework of our society as a whole.
Well said. We've covered a ton of ground today, haven't we? The details of the case, the reasoning behind the decision, what happens when you ignore the rules, and now we've even dug into the historical context.
And through all of that, I think we've gotten a much better understanding of labor law and why it's so important to protect those employee rights in the workplace.
I think so, too. And for everyone listening, hopefully you've learned something valuable about this part of the law. Remember, even simple actions can have big consequences. So knowing your rights and what you're responsible for, that's crucial in navigating the world of work.
Absolutely. On that note, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive today.
Thanks for joining us. Until next time, keep learning, keep exploring, and keep diving deep. Okay, so we've been time traveling a bit, looking at the history surrounding ILGWUV-NLRB. It's really interesting to see how this case connects to the whole labor movement and the fight for worker rights.
Yeah, it shows how those big legal decisions, they don't just happen out of nowhere. They're influenced by what's going on in society at the time, the economics, the politics, all of it. In this case, it's a perfect example of how all those forces come together.
Right, and we talk about how in the 50s and 60s, unions were facing a lot of scrutiny. But was this case specifically about trying to just, like, hold unions back?
Yeah.
Or was it something different?
That's a good question. And it really gets to the heart of what the court was trying to do. Their decision in ILGWUV-NLRB, it wasn't about weakening unions. It was more about making sure everyone involved was playing on a level playing field. Workers, employers, unions, everybody.
So it wasn't about taking sides, but more about setting clear rules for the game.
Exactly. It's like the court was saying, look, we're all for workers organizing and bargaining, but let's do it the right way. Make it fair, transparent, and make sure it's really what the employees want.
That makes sense. It's like putting up guardrails to keep everyone on track, right?
Right.
Whether it's a union that's overstepping or an employer trying to skirt the rules.
Yeah, exactly. And by really focusing on the need to verify that majority support, the court basically told everyone, no more shortcuts, no more assuming, you got to do the work.
So this case was more than just a slap on the wrist, huh? It was a real turning point for how labor relations worked.
It was. And that whole idea of focusing on employee choice, making sure workers have a real say in who represents them, that's been huge ever since ILGWUV-NLRB.
It's pretty amazing how one case can have such a big impact. It changed how we think about worker rights and the whole relationship between labor and management.
Yeah, it shows how powerful the law can be. It adapts to changing times, but also holds on to those core ideas of fairness and justice.
Well, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive into ILGWUV-NLRB. We've covered a lot, haven't we? The legal arguments, the historical context, what it all means for the big picture.
And along the way, I hope we've given you a better grasp of just how complicated labor law can be and why it's so important to protect the rights of workers.
I agree. To everyone listening, remember, knowing your rights and your responsibilities at work, that's crucial. No matter who you are, employer, union rep, employee, understanding the rules of the game can make all the difference.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this episode.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and keep exploring the fascinating world of law.